Chapter 8. The Invitation to the Wedding. The previous chapter depicted how a letter was delivered to Christian Rosycross in a miraculous way by a splendent supernatural being. The letter contains the invitation to participate in the alchemical wedding and reads as follows. This is the day. This day. This is the day of the royal wedding. Are you thereto by birth inclined and unto joy by God designed? Then you may to the mountain wend on which three stately temples stand, and there observe the wonder. Keep to the aim, in light remain. Unless you bathe most carefully, the wedding will do you harm. Woe to him who in sin delays. He will be found too light in weight. As you will understand, the day referred to here as the royal wedding is the genuine return to the immovable kingdom, which is only possible through a complete transfiguration of the entire microcosm. Therefore, the ancient brotherhood speaks of an alchemical wedding, which means a complete alchemical reversal of the entire human reality of being. In every sacred language, this day of days, this celebration, this song of songs of the genuinely striving soul is designated as the compendium of new, true divine life. Throughout the aeons, the heavenly brotherhood has called humanity, submerged in the night, to approach this day. But everyone must understand that arriving at the wedding is only possible after a personal invitation, a personal assignment. Such a personal invitation is the key to the path. The eternal day of divine reality is always there. The song of songs of divine love and the heavenly life can invariably be heard, but only they who are called to this by birth and allotted to God's joy may strive for this luminous mountain of the Spirit. We also find this not to be ignored proviso in the sacred language, but unfortunately, this key to the path has repeatedly given rise to many regrettable misunderstandings that have entrenched untold numbers more deeply than ever in the night of dialectical life. The mystically and natural religiously inclined speak of the chosen, or of a divine arbitrariness, by which one person is predisposed suitable to go the path to the light, and another person not. The occultist makes the same cardinal error. He depends on brotherhoods and hierophants of the light, which, after calling him, initiate and lead him home into the new life for which he, she so yearned. Let us therefore make an effort to allow the truth to somewhat illuminate this key to the path, so that the truth frees you from possible illusion, for none of us is dependent upon people where God's gifts of redemption and liberation are concerned. If we consider ourselves bound, then it is the illusion that binds us. If in our seeking the light we consider ourselves fundamentally dependent on others, then it is the delusion that makes us dependent. If we find our path to liberation blocked, it is the I delusion that chains us. The human soul is and remains autonomous in whatever state it exists. You may find this statement questionable and assert our dependence on natural laws and natural forces, our fundamental imprisonment in dialectical life, but all your doubts will be dispelled when you understand the real meaning of freedom. For dialectical man, accustomed to the natural opposites, freedom is the opposite of bondage, and therefore means being unbound. For the transfigurist, however, freedom is, in the binding to law, reason, and cosmos, autonomously ascending in the divine reality. Anyone who liberates the path to this reality in his own being is now called to the celebration of the royal wedding. To liberate the path in oneself means making oneself suitable for the inflow of the Holy Spirit. This means rising to a law of a higher nature, the voluntary and free binding of oneself to a new life. Therefore, the pupil must be born to this new possibility, as it were, and achieve this birth himself, herself. When the intended birth has become a fact, the pupil is also called to another life, even designated to it in the clear signature of the divine spirit. Let us now consider what this new birth entails and how it comes into being. You know of the serpent fire system, which is to be found in the spinal column of every dialectical being. The serpent fire system is the seat of life, of consciousness. Thinking, willing, feeling, and acting originate from this system. This complete and so complicated source of life is very precisely attuned to the world, to the life field in which life expresses itself. This balance between life and life field is so completely fundamental that a disturbance in it must lead directly to a catastrophe. The auric being, which survives every incarnation, has recorded accurately all the experiences of former existences, and every new material existence in the field of manifestation is a faithful continuation of the previous existences and in complete harmony with life field and cosmos. We shall understand, therefore, that life is always obliged to move within the framework of the past, life field, and cosmos. Life cannot step outside of this, because it is explicable from the essence of this nature. It is one with it, stands and falls with it. So the action sphere of life cannot spread out in all directions unchecked. Life is bound, and in this action sphere, it can endeavor to manifest itself, either in good or in evil. Our life field presents a picture of change, a picture of rising, shining, and fading, a picture of opposites. Our life and our source of life, the serpent fire system, completely correspond with it. This is our curse, the fate of the human race. As pupils of this school, we know this. When we want to rise above this life, this curse, what has to happen? In all events, there is no method of life that the life constant in the serpent fire system, the I, can attempt to undertake that could bring a successful result. For whatever life method one may try, it is and always will be explicable from the life field, because, as indicated, life and life field are absolutely one. If we want to rise beyond the fate of the human race, then another source of life, another life force which is not explicable from this reality of existence, has to gain power over the serpent fire system, so that the old life in it is first subdued and then dissolved. We call this the outpouring of the Holy Spirit, or the overshadowing by the Holy Spirit. The human being who is able to receive this Spirit is born and called to the royal wedding. Such a person may strive towards the mountain of the Spirit. Why? Because through the touch of a new serpent fire, the true Pentecostal fire, he, she has acquired a link with another life field, another. Cosmos, and is therefore obliged by the universal law to live in accordance with that new reality. In this situation, the remarkable anomaly arises that by virtue of its personality, with a body of flesh and blood, an entity exists in this life field. But as to the serpent fire aspect, already belongs to another life field. Of this, the holy language says that one is in the world, but not of the world. We will all understand that this situation, though explicable from the new birth, is nonetheless anomalous. The personality belongs here, but life no longer does. In this state, a further process must take place, for the personality of this life, and explicable from this life field, is not suitable for the other life field to which the pupil is called through the birth of the new serpent fire. Therefore, the old personality, the old temple, has to be demolished and a new temple built. So after the birth of the new serpent fire, the process of transfiguration must evolve. We see that when through this new birth the pupil is placed before transfiguration, he, she can progressively strive towards the holy mountain upon which three mighty temples stand, the temples mentioned in the invitation received by Christian Rosycross. There he or she can behold, contemplate, and realize everything from beginning to end. The universal teachings often speak of these three temples, or of the temple that must be built in 3 days. These temples refer to the new personality that has to be constructed in the new field of life, that is, the new temple of the consciousness, the new temple of the blood, and that of the new material body. When a new serpent fire touches our serpent fire system, this does not mean that the new temple of the consciousness is already built. This temple, which is sometimes also designated as a tree, the tree of life, must emerge new, elevated, strong and steady, and its 12 pairs of branches must unfold and grow in a wholly different way than is the case with our nervous system. Coinciding with that, another 12-fold blood being has to unfold so that a glorified body can arise as a pillar in the divine temple. So we may finally recognize that the birth of the Holy Spirit in the serpent fire of our natural dialectical existence is the beginning of true pupilship, the beginning of the way to transfiguration. Therefore, the alchemical wedding of Christian Rosycross also has to start with this, and because such a beginning reveals the existential anomaly that one lives in the world without being of the world, the pupil in this situation is given the following a warning. Keep to the aim. In light remain. Unless you bathe most carefully, the wedding will do you harm. Woe to him who in sin delays. He will be found too light in weights. The warning makes sense because in this first state of pupilship, the forces of the old life field fight to retrieve their power over the evader. Medusa adorns herself with various garments to tempt the young pupil to turn back. The light of the old nature can indeed glitter like a white sun, as Gustav Meyrink says, and woe to whoever worships this light. But whoever is awakened by the Holy Spirit, the rising dawn, can extend their arms, so their body forms a living cross. The fire of the Spirit surrounds the pupil like a golden rose. Whoever extends his arms in this state of being will experience that invisible hands grasp his with the sign of the order. They link him into the living chain that extends to infinity. The perishable in him is burned to ashes. Through the death of nature, it is changed into a flame of life. He stands upright in the golden Rosycross, eternally liberated. By far the majority of seekers do not yet stand in this pupilship of the birth out of the Holy Spirit. They are still pupils in the forecourt. They are called to this birth. They may celebrate this birth when, through self-knowledge, they long so much for the spirit of renewal that just as the deer yearns for the flowing stream, they thirst for the stream of living water. Only those who stand in dialectical life hungering and thirsting for the spirit are ripe for the new birth, no longer in I-centrality, but in the stillness of I-less desire. It is on this basis that the spiritual birth is established. When it is your holy earnest to find the spirit of life, then you yourself have to awaken it in the serpent fire system. When you yearn to win the spirit, then you must dare to lose yourself. Who wishes to meet the spirit must fan into a flame the spark in this own being. How? By going the path of the cross, that means breaking the chains of dialectics with one's own hands. When, while in this process, we can offer the spirit a state of life that emerges from the silence of the eyeless hearts yearning for the new life source, the spirit can and shall live in eternity.